Greetings and welcome back to another ongoing series of Shurim and Daf Yomi. My name is Yitzchak Yat Shalom. We're now in Masechet Arachim, Daf Chav Gimel Amud Aleph at the top of the Amud, with our final podcast, and it's the sixth parak. Hamakdish, we're beginning with Mishnah Bet. Hamakdishna Chasav Aitah Alav Ketubat Tisha. If a person is Makdish everything he owns, and he owes the Ketubah to his wife from that property, two ways of understanding this. One is that everything's fine until such point as he divorces her, at which he has to make a neder that he will not get any hanah from her, the suspicion being that he's going to then, she will then collect her ketubah from Hekdesh, remarry him as a way of rooting this property back from Hekdesh and getting it back. We'll have to see why Rishua says there's no neder needed. The other possible interpretation of Rabbi Elazar is to say that at that point he must divorce her, and with that neder. If a man has an arev on his ketubah, somebody who's a guarantor to pay, and then the husband's divorcing her, then when he's divorcing her, again, the concern is she will go and collect from the cosigner, her husband having no assets. He will then remarry her, she'll come back, and that way they will cheat the cosigner out of the amount of the ketubah. Okay, but my kare palgi, what's the dispute between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua? The first possible explanation of their machloket is whether or not we're concerned that a person is likely or may make collude to try to cheat Hekdesh. Rabbi Elazar says we are concerned, and therefore we have to ensure it by making this neder, having him make this neder. Problem is, Rav Huna issued a memra in which he said that if a person is dying and he was makdish everything he owns and then said, oops, I owe Ploni 100 zoos on from my property, we believe him, and Hekdesh has to give up that 100 to Ploni, because we assume nobody's ever going to try to collude to steal from Hekdesh. So perhaps what he's saying is only Rabbi Yeshua's position, which is not really a difficult position to be in, but shall we say that Rabbi Elazar would not agree with that? So, lo, ad kan lo pligi ela bari. First take is that Rabbi Elazar and Yeshua disagree only about a person who's healthy. Everybody would agree that a shchimira is not going to do that. A person never sins if he's not going to benefit. And this guy is about to die. There's another version of it. That Rabbi Elazar and Yeshua agree that a healthy person will make kununya ala hekdesh. And here we've gone this path several times, that the machloket is whether or not a publicly taken neder can be repealed. Rabbi Yeshua will say that it could be repealed, so therefore taking this neder won't help at all. Rabbi Elazar says it'll help because you can't repeal it. And then you move it up one step. You could certainly repeal a neder that was taken publicly. The real machloket is about a neder that's taken with the intent of the rabbim being the no dream, as it were. In other words, that a person takes a neder and says, I'm taking this on behalf of the community, as it were. And a neder like that can't be repealed. That would be Rabbi Eliezer's position. So then Amemar's ruling, which is that a publicly taken neder could be repealed, but one taken al dat rabbim can't be repealed, is he taking Rabbi Eliezer's position? And also the language of the Mishnah is wrong. If Rabbi Yeshua's position is that it could be repealed, then he shouldn't say you don't need to take such an eder. He should say it wouldn't help to take such an eder. Our final conclusion is that the machloket is whether or not you could repeal Hekdesh as you are able to repeal a neder. Meaning that Rabbi Eliezer would say that once you're makdish something, you can't be shoal on it, you can't have retract it because of charata, and therefore once you're makdish, there's nothing you can do, and therefore we're concerned that the ketubah is going to be taken wrongly and brought back to you. Rabbi Yeshua said you can be shor al hekdesh and retract the whole thing. Therefore, there's no need for a neder. V'atanya, we support her. Makdish chasam. I tell the ketubah shor al ozam akshu. I'm sure you do hanav. Rabbi Yeshua mer enot tzarich. And we have the following statement: Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, Heinen, Rabbi Shemai, Heinen, Rabbi Telel. This machloket, Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shua follows their schools, because Rabbi Lazar is a student of Beit Shammai and Rabbi Shua is a student of Beit Hillel. Beit Shammai mekdesh ta'ut hekdesh, Beit Hillel mekdesh hekdesh ta'ut eino hekdesh. The beginning of the fifth parak of Nazir, the machloket, and Beit Hillel says that if you are makdesh b'ta'ut, you could have it retracted, and therefore that Rabbi Shua said you don't need hekdesh neder, just retract the hekdesh. Okay. From Shem Gamliel Omer, then the story about the Arev. So we have a story. Moshe Bar Atzri, Arva de Chalte Havi. There was a fellow named Moshe Bar Atzri who was the Arev on a ketubah for his son, literally for his daughter-in-law. Rav Huna Bereit Tzumar Abonin Havi, who Chikolei Milta, his son was a student, not the famous Rav Huna, but Rav Huna Bereit Moshe here, and was very poor. Amar Abaya, Leikad Nasvi Eitzel Rav Huna, is there anybody here who could give, and evidently his father Moshe was rich and was not supporting him. So isn't there anybody who could give an Eitzel, Abaya evidently was saying this loudly enough, he wanted Rav Huna to hear it, isn't there anybody who could give advice to Rav Huna, to Ligarsh, to Levit, to Titbak, to Vatami Avua, to Lehadri Mehadri? Somebody should give advice to this Rav Huna that he should divorce his wife. She could be Toveh Ketubah from his father, the Arev, and then he could remarry her and get the money back. So Amalei Rav, Rav Tundavai says, V'ana Nidor Hanatanon, when our Mishnah, we said that in such a case, Mishnah Gamliel said that you have to take a netter of Hanah so that you can't remarry her. So V'abai, what's Abai's answer? Ata called the Megarish of Edina Megarish. He said, who told him to go do the Gerushin and Beitin? Let him go do it privately with two Edim. Nobody's going to force him to take such an edit. So the Sophie went melted the Kohen Havi. It turned out that this Rav Huna was a Kohen, which means the whole solution wouldn't help because he couldn't remarry her anyways. Rabbaya Bator Anya Azla Niyuta. That's the aphorism that poverty follows the poor. This guy just doesn't have any way out. But parenthetically, Yama Rabbaya Achi, since when does Abaya say you're allowed to give such advice? From Rabbi Ezu Rasha Arum, in Masechet Soto, we talk about a Rasha Arum, a clever Rasha. What's a clever Rasha? Zame Si Eitzelim Kor Menachasim Kor Meshem Gamliel. Meshem Gamliel has this system where a person could say, I'm going to give you a gift, and then when you die, it goes to somebody else. It's a directed Yerusha. And it's going to go through a whole chain of different people as each person dies. Meshem Gamliel says that in such a case, if any person along the chain sells the property, the chain is broken, and that person gets to keep the money and go to his own inheritance. So Abaye said, a truly wicked but clever wicked person is somebody who gives advice to anybody in that chain to sell, because they followed the letter of the law and it's their property, but they've done a terrible thing. So why is Abaye giving such advice to Rav Huna to do essentially the same thing and cheat his father? The answer is Breshani. It's different when it's your father you're getting it from. And it's a Rabbanan Shani, plus it's a student who's in need, so we're helping him out. But typically, the Arvi Ketubah Lo Mishtabed, we have another concern, which is that the father is an Arev on a Ketubah. An Arev is a guarantor. But an Arev on a Ketubah is not Mishtabed, meaning he doesn't really owe the money. And there's something we'll detail that in a little bit. And the answer is Kablan Have. A Kablan is different than an Arev. A typical Arev case is that A is going to lend money to B, but B doesn't have any assets. So B brings C along, who's very rich, and C says, I'll back him up. That's the Arev. But essentially, A lends the money to B and collects from B, and then if B is absolutely broke, then C has sort of put his name on the line. A Kablan is somebody who really initiates the deal, and C comes up to A and says, you lend money to B for me. And it's as if C actually got the money, and therefore A can come and collect from C more directly. Now, we'll see that this is not so obvious. There's a machloket whether the kablan could be mishtabed and become obligated to pay, even if the love, B in our scenario, had no assets at the time of the loan. But it was a manda amar that says that only if the lova had assets at the time of the loan is the kablan mishtabed, and it looks like Rav Huna didn't, was poor, and it's so that his father was not mishtabed, so Abaye's solution wouldn't have worked anyways. One possibility is that Ravuna had assets at the time of the marriage, and they got destroyed. Like a field was flooded. Or it could be that a father will always be mishabed himself towards his son, even if he doesn't have assets. Deitmar, and this is the background of everything. Deitmar is not supporting the last statement, but the whole background. Arev de ktubah de rakolo mishtabed. Everyone agrees that a simple arev on a ktubah is not mishtabed. He's simply putting a good name in to help a couple get married. Kablan de bal chov, and a regular chov, and a fellow's a kablan, divrei kol mishtabed. Everybody agrees that a kablan of a bal chov is fully mishtabed and chayv to pay if the lova doesn't pay. But arev de bal chov, a kablan de ktubah, the two guys in the middle, pligi. Now, here's the machloket. So there's some who say that if the lova or the husband, in the case of a ktubah, have assets at the time of the marriage or the loan, then the kablan or arev is mishtabed, and if not, and others say that in any case he's mishtabed. And v'hilchata b'chulu, what's the halacha? V'gav d'leit leinam mishtabed, even if the lova or the husband does not have assets, the kablan or the arev, depending on the case, is mishtabed, levar me'arev d'ktubah, except for an arev d'ktubah, which is our case. Dafagav de itle lo mishtabed, even if the chatan has assets, the arev is not mishtabed. My tam mitzvah kavod lo midi chasre. He's simply doing a mitzvah to help this guy get married, and he's not really losing anything. In this case, he's not really having any gain, and therefore he's not mishtabed. So we answered that the father of this ravuna, this Moshe Atzri, well, Moshe Atzri was a kablan, in which case he was mishtabed. Okay. There was a fellow who sold all his property, and then afterwards he divorced his wife, but some of that property, of course, was already mishubah to the ketubah. Shachov Yosef read to Rava Lekame Rapapa. So Rava's son sent a message to Rava's student Rapapa and said, Arev Tanan, Hekdesh Tanan, Lokeach Mahu. So our Mishnah talks about the Arev, Rishon Gamliel, and the first part of the Mishnah that invoked with Rishon Gamliel was talking about Hekdesh, and in both cases we said that the earlier person has a claim on the property, but the person has to take a neder to make sure it doesn't come back. What happens with the Lokeach? When a guy buys property, then there is a lien on it to an earlier chov. Does the person have to take a neder of hana? Amarlei Tana, Kuyuchli Nechshav Nezil. So Papa said, what, you want the Tana to be a blabbermouth and just yap? He doesn't have to list everything. Meaning, just like it's true about those two, it's true about Lokeach. So Nadei Amri, the Nadei disagreed. Did not, none lo tana, no tana. If it's listed, it's listed, but not, otherwise not. And Rosh Hashai, my Tana Nadei, Rosh Hashai explained the difference. We understand in the case of Hekdesh, we want Hekdesh to gain, and therefore we want to make sure we don't cheat Hekdesh. Arev na mitzvah udavan v'lo midi chasre. In the case of an Arev, the guy did a mitzvah and didn't gain anything, and therefore we don't want him to be suffering. Alokeach mechti midiya did a cholchadika ale ktuba, but Alokeach, he knows this fellow's married, so he knows there's a ktuba on him. Literally, he knows that everybody has a ktuba on them. Ema nezav nizbun, so why, am I nezav nizbun? Why did he go and buy the property without checking which property has the ktuba on it? Yudin afsir afsir anafshe. He lost it himself, and therefore, we're not going to help him out. Okay, the next mishnah. Makdisha chasal etalav ktuba tisha val chov. Now a person is makdish, his property, and there's a ktuba or a bal chov, that's claimed on it. You can't come and claim the property directly from Hekdesh. What do you do, the creditor? What happens is somebody else comes along and redeems the property and knows that they're going to have to pay from that property to pay off this guy's debts, which means, of course, they're going to pay very little for the property or whatever it's worth minus those debts. Now, in the case, what if a guy's makdish everything he owns, and it's, let's say, $90,000, but he has a debt of $100,000? What do we do? Mosif od dinar. The love gives him one more dinar, because the guy is nothing. And then he can redeem everything for the one dinar. We'll see why. In order to be able to pay off his debt. Now, let's see how this all plays out. Now, if by the way, in the Mishnah, which says apodeh, meaning the one who redeems has to redeem the property in order to pay it off, really the property wasn't even in Hekdesh, because first it was, there was an earlier lien on it. The answer is, so people should not think that you could just use Hekdesh without redeeming it. So this is really a full redemption. Our Mishnah, by the way, does not follow Shem Gamliel. What he says is essentially that if your obligation is greater than the amount you were Hekdesh, your Makdesh, then there's nothing to be Poda, because your obligation was not on that property, and Hekdesh was good. Because if you owe $100,000 but you only owe $90,000, and that $100,000 debt is not on the property, it's a separate debt on you. And the property is available for Hekdesh. That's Rav Shimon Gamliel's position. Rabbanan ad kama, according to Rabbanan, not Rav Shimon Gamliel, how much less could you have than your debt? You could be down to 50% of the debt that you own still is Veshuba to the debt and has an earlier claim than Hekdesh. Okay, even though we said in the previous parak that if somebody owes an erech and also owes an olah ushlamim, we take a pledge from them. We give them money for food for 30 days and clothing for a year. Mitam mutzat, a bed that's made. Misandalav tefilav, they give him his shoes, his tefillin. Lo valo lishto levanav, to him but not to his family members. Meaning that they're going to have to go beg, and this probably would spur him more strongly to go and get the money together and pay it off. Himaya uman, if he's a worker, an artisan, otein lo shnei klei umanut mikol minumin. We allow him to keep two tools of each kind of tool he has. We'll see a couple examples. Charash, if he's a carpenter, notein lo shnei matzadin ushnei megirot. Essentially, like two axes and two saws. We already saw Rabbelezer's opinion earlier. If he's a farmer, we give him his team of oxen. If he's a donkey driver, we give him his donkey. Let's say, back to the artisan, that he had a bunch of hammers and only one saw. We don't say, you can go sell one of your hammers and now you can take a second saw. You get to keep two of whatever you got enough of. And whatever you've got of the fewer, meaning if you only got one saw, you keep one saw. You don't get to trade around. By the way, if somebody is makdish his property, then that includes his tefillin. His tefillin is also included in his assets. Now, my time, what's the reason that we give him this fellow this stuff? If he's too poor for the erech, meaning, hachayehu me'erkecha. You have to let him, it's like a play on machu, chayehu, but also the who. You gotta let him be himself and not totally, like, disappear as a result of his obligation. The formal, inference is that it says machu mirkecha. If he's too poor, it doesn't include the wife. The reason the rabbis disagree and say you can't keep animals, even if you're a donkey driver or a farmer, is because those are your property, not your tools of trade, of the trade. We said that if you only had one, let's say, hammer, and you can't sell another saw and get another hammer. So pshita, that's obvious. Makes sense. After all, if you only had one hammer till now, that seemed to be enough for you. Why should we let you have two? The answer is, you could argue as follows. Till now, when he had good assets and he was able to make money and didn't all belong to Hekdesh, people would lend him something if he needed it. But now nobody will lend it to him. And therefore, we might allow him to get a second one. Kamash Blan, we don't. Hamakdish and Achazam Lenot Tfilav. So, it's a story. Yahu Gaber does have Nino Lenichsa. There was a guy who sold all his property. Atal Kamar of Yemar, Malu Slikule Tfilin. Rav Yemar said, take off this guy's tefillin, that's part of his property. So, my Kamash Blan, that's not teaching anything. That's the end of our Mishnah that says if you're Makdish your property, tefillin count as property. So the answer is that we wouldn't know that from Hekdesh, because in the case of Hekdesh, a guy says, I'm doing a great mitzvah, so my tefillin come along. When a guy's selling his property, mitzvah the gufei lo zavin inish, a person's not going to sell a mitzvah of his own body, his tefillin, kamash balan, that he would. Okay. The end of the parak. If a fellow is makdish his property or his mar, he commits to an erech. He has no claim. In other words, there's no claim of his assets in the clothing of his wife or his kids, or in the dyeing that he added into their clothing. Shoes, new shoes that he bought for them. Even though we say that you're allowed to sell a slave and dress him up fancy to make him worth a lot more in the market, it was marketing. You could give him a garment worth $30 more and he'll be worth $100,000 more, or whatever it is. In other words, the upgrade in value could be far more than the little investment. Say the same thing. If you have to sell a cow and you wait until market day or slaughter day, she'll be worth a lot more. The same thing. If you have a jewel in a small town, it'll be worth a lot more if you take it to the big city. But Hekdesh only has a claim on things as they are in their place at this time now. And you can't say, well, in a month it'll be worth more, and you can't say that in another city it'll be worth more. It is what it is, where it is, when it is. And the small bright, meaning you don't keep the jewel that's around with people who treat it lightly and say, let's wait until more serious people come, or let's wait till we take it to a big town and get a greater value. Kodesh Lashem, Stamek Deshot Levetakabayit. What does Kodesh Lashem, the end of the Pasuk, mean? That the default of Hekdesh is that it goes to the Betakabayit. We'll see what the default of Cherem is in Tuprakim, but in the meantime, we've concluded our study of the sixth parak. We've got our study of the seventh parak in the next podcast. In the meantime, you should have a wonderful day.